From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 19th installment in an ongoing conversation that we've been having with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the Soviet Union, beginning with the Russian Revolution in 1917 and running up to the dissolution of the USSR in December of 1991. Luciana, good to see you.
Good morning, Don. Good to be here.
So I guess we're picking up with Trotsky and the role of Trotsky's ideology and his followers and that trend in the Spanish Civil War.
Yes, and when I start with the end of the Spanish Civil War in 1939, Trotsky wrote an assessment, and I'm just going to quote him. So he wrote, "The inspirer of deceit and of the massacre of the revolutionary workers of Spain was Stalin. The defeat of the Spanish Revolution falls as a new, indelible blot upon the already bespattered Kremlin gang." So that was his assessment. That Stalin crushed.
Yeah, meanwhile, Stalin is the only one that provided material assistance of any substance to the Spanish government, to the Republicans. And those who were following Trotsky decided that they could afford to cut off part of the United Front that was assembled in favor of having their revolution in the middle of an attack by the fascists. But it was Stalin's fault.
Trotsky plays with words. He insists on calling this the Republic the Spanish Revolution. Instead of using the word the Republic, he uses the Spanish Revolution. But let's clear that up in a minute. So I think it's important to refer to the role that Trotsky, and particularly Trotsky's writings, played in the Spanish Civil War. They left a legacy. The Spanish Civil War and the defeat of the Republic of Republican Spain provided Trotsky with the opportunity to denounce the Soviet Union's policy of socialism in one country.
Right.
And he denounced it with one special word, Stalinist, a word of his own coinage.
Right.
And this slur is still used today by left liberals and Trotskyists to silence any attempt at objective evaluation of the Stalin government. So in his writings about the Spanish Civil War, Trotsky accused Stalin of strangling the workers in the Soviet Union, and its worker state, that was an opportunity to say that, and of doing the same in Spain. He characterized Stalin in his writings in the Spanish Civil War as counter-revolutionary, defending capitalism in Spain, aiding the bourgeois republic, crushing the workers' revolution, both in Spain and in Russia. That is, he felt that time was ripe for a revolution in Spain, and that this was crushed by the Republic with the aid of the Soviet Union.
Mm.
So by 1939, Trotsky was writing that Stalin had been Franco's best ally.
Yeah.
That his provincial, Stalin's provincial slow mind had not understood that only a socialist Bolshevik-style revolution could defeat fascism.
Mm-hmm.
This is so bizarre, because that, of course, became true for the Soviet Union, but Spain did not have in place a Bolshevik revolution and a Soviet Republic of Spain.
Yeah.
So his emphasis was to say that within the Civil War you had to the potential for revolution existed, and Spain had just a short little time to effect it, and so then must crush the Republic, and then it could win after it could win over fascism.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, first of all, for him to be saying that about the key role that the Bolsheviks would have to play in Spain, given his own personal relationship to the bulk of the leadership of the Bolsheviks and his characterization of what happened in 1917, and of course his outright opposition to the foreign policy of the Bolshevik state, if you were going to use the term, around the world at this very time. So, you know, he has on the ground, not he personally, but his trend, you know, those following his ideals, PUM, of course, are probably the group that the single cause of the defeat. If there was a possibility that the Republic was going to stand, you know, they were the ones that broke up the group that had been arrayed and aligned against the fascists. And so,
absolutely. Yeah. Yes, and you know, that was his task from the beginning, that is to split the Popular Front. He was opposed to the Popular, opposed. He wanted to destroy the Popular Front. So, but it's just so mind-boggling, because he says that you need a Bolshevik style revolution to defeat fascism. But in view of the Soviet defeat of Hitler and fascism in 1945, which, of course, Trotsky did not live to see, one would think that the Trotsky's views would have been dismissed by posterity as the ravings of a profoundly bitter man whose treasonous activities in exile in Mexico against the Soviet Union were being exposed in the Moscow trials of 1937-30. I mean, at the same time that he was saying all these things against the Soviet Union, that it was counter-revolutionary and by implication should have been overthrown, well, that was actually a plot that was being exposed in the Moscow trial, right, a topic that we may take up, you know, again.
Yeah, we will, for sure.
I mean, later on.
Yeah.
So Trotsky's role in the Soviet, in the Spanish Civil War is interesting, because the Anglophone left became enamored of Trotsky, especially after 1956.
Yeah.
When Khrushchev accused Stalin of all sorts of paranoid plots, of omnipotent despotism, of stupidity, cowardice, lack of defense preparation against Hitler's invasion. This was all in Khrushchev 1956 secret report to the party.
Right.
The cult of Trotsky, this is, you know, what I think, the cult of Trotsky, which found expression in the new left's anti-Soviet communism in the 60s among the Western left, especially the intellectual left, I found nothing but astounding.
Yep. Yeah, but I mean, perhaps, you had... Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is, in essence, you saw the final takedown of the Soviet Union being... I don't know, articulated more or less as a fight against Stalinism. You know, they had Brzezinski as a representative of the old order of Stalinism, of, you know, the archaic and the ossified and the brutal and the anti-democratic and, you know, the cult of personality, all these things that were, you know, attributed to Stalin and to Stalinism as a philosophy. This was, you know, when they were talking about perestroika, they were talking about restructuring, you know, out of a Stalinist mode. And, you know, the country lasted about, 8 minutes after they finally implemented the policy. And this is what Khrushchev was starting, you know, towards that trend also.
Yeah. These these, yep, eventually the Western press called the resistance to particularly, well, the Yeltsin takeover, the resistance to that they called reactionary communists.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the New York Times description, for example. and looking at their writings in the mid-late 30s about Germany and the Soviet Union, it's interesting that they would dare to, you know, use terminology like that ever, even if it is 70, 80 years later. But of course, they did.
Yeah. So it's important to go over what Trotsky wrote in the years 1936 and 39 about the Spanish Civil War, because it is a good exercise in illustrating just how noxious his anti-Stalinist stance and campaign was, and how exalted and impractical his idea of revolution were. So that's what I want to illustrate. And I also think that it's important to go over this, what he wrote, what he stood for. If we are to learn from the victory of the counter-revolution in the Soviet Union and the overthrow of communism there, and to pick ourselves up from there and revive a socialist movement, Trotsky is just not the prophet to go to.
Right.
I mean, in condemning the Soviet Union, he condemned the first experiment in history to try the path of communism. To say that the Soviet Union was anti-communist is to reject communism altogether.
That's right.
With all its flaws or whatever, So to be anti-Stalinist today, in the manner of Trotsky, is to be anti-communist.
That's right.
Now, what do you say?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, in essence, you've had one successful, what followed was China and those revolutions that have taken place elsewhere, such as in Cuba and in Vietnam and other places, Korea, some others. But you had this huge block that followed from the revolution in 1917 and the the Trotskyists, really, now, but certainly, you had mentioned before that the anti-Soviet left had adopted, these various Trotskyist positions and the terminology. But that terminology also prevails, particularly, the appellation of Stalinist, prevails among the anti-socialist, anti-communist, anti-progressive, and anti-democratic, even, forces, around the planet. I mean, they use Stalinism as an insult in Langley, in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, and have for, for decades. So,
yeah, it was a gift.
Right.
Trotsky, the word Stalinism is a contribution to Cold War propaganda.
Right. It's foundational to it and invented by Trotsky. So,
yeah.
So you have that. But you also have, what followed from the Russian Revolution was the USSR, which defeated Germany. And then in the aftermath, all of the socialist states in Eastern Europe. Now, you have to look at this in the context of the wars, both World War I and World War II, from Russia's perspective, that, we got to stop Germany from just rolling in whenever they feel like it. And so the need for, and the negotiated, agreement for these countries, Poland and eastward, as buffer states, that was a part of the settlement. And rather than occupying them and raiding them, like, say, for example, the way the U.S. is handling Iraq, what they did was they helped them develop their economies. They integrated it into a socialist economic bloc, and they rebuilt it, even though they were frozen out of the rest of the world economy by the U.S. and its allies. The people there lived well. They had jobs, free education, free health care. No homelessness or any of that, all the problems that we have here.
Full employment.
Yep, all of that. And so, you know, it wasn't the classic case of, you know, of conquest. Now, where there were, you know, bourgeois and or nationalist inspired, you know, acts of resistance to mm-hmm. this arrangement, then the USSR was dealing with it in essence as a, look, we're not letting Germany come in here, and we know what'll happen if we let you guys do this thing or that thing or that thing. Germany will be coming in here soon. And as a matter of fact, what happened was Gorbachev allowed in a democratic fashion the self-determination of the East European states in 1989. And by 1995, you had the U.S. blowing up Yugoslavia and incorporating all of the former Warsaw Pact countries into NATO and deploying military up to the border, where now they drill, you know, pretty regularly, practicing an invasion of the U.S. of the Russia.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what kind of what was going on. This is what Trotsky found offensive, and you know, it coincided with what they found offensive in Langley and the Pentagon.
Apparently, yes. I mean, not just apparently, substantially.
Yeah, that's correct.
sorry. So Trotsky in the Spanish Civil War, so as early as April 1936, after the Popular Front won election, he said that the Popular Front curbs social revolution. He wrote, "The role that the Popular Front plays in the face of the powerful movement of workers' and peasants' revolution is the role of a gigantic brake built and set in motion by traitors and servile scum." So what do we see there? He assumes, and there was a powerful movement of workers and peasants, but they had not effected a revolution. All that was there was this bourgeois republic, which was attacked by Franco's fascism. So even before the Civil War broke out in July 1936, Trotsky advocated on April 12, 1936, a virtual revolt against the Popular Front. He wrote that the Spanish partisans of his Fourth International, now, and I don't know what the number was, but he wrote that the Spanish partisans of his Fourth International should condemn and denounce mercilessly before the masses the policy of all the leaders who took part in the Popular Front, and also to condemn the leaders of the PUM, the Poder Obrero de Unificación Marxista, that is the workers' power, the workers' power, unified power, Marxist power. Especially, he says, former left communists like Andres Nin. So what is he doing here? These people, these revolutionary people, we assume to exist en masse, were to overthrow the republic, to renounce the Marxist PUM, and so in other words, to reject everyone on the Republican side, and to invent on the spot another reality. In my view, to invent another people. As Brecht might say, if these people don't work for the revolution, you know, if this reality it doesn't work for the revolution, then let's invent another one.
Right.
This is you know, delusional. But yeah. So what could these ideal masses of revolutionary people, on whose front should they be fighting on? What could they choose? So he says that Trotsky's Fourth International, its adherents should join the Socialist Party and the youth groups and create, listen to this, a fraction in the spirit of Bolshevism. to create nuclei and factions in the trade unions and other mass organizations. So, in other words, he was recommending split and split, and then he wrote, just to cause chaos, to intervene, whoever these Fourth International adherents were, whom he disassociated from the PUM, and he wrote to direct their main attention to the spontaneous and semi-spontaneous movements, to concern themselves with the temperature of the masses and not the parliamentary cliques, to insist always on the masses forming their committees of action, elected ad hoc, juntas, Soviets, and to enlarge them constantly. Now, how are you supposed to interpret direct their main attention? How are you supposed to measure the temperature? How are you supposed to form committees of action in the middle of this fascist assault?
Yeah. I mean, here's the soil. I mean, you laid it out. Here's some numbers. In the elections in 1936, you had the popular vote on the 16th of February and the 4th of March. A couple of weeks apart.
Yes, that's right.
So you had Popular Front had 4.451 million votes as against the National Bloc, which had 4.375. Again, 4.451 to 4.375. That's how close. Now, inside the Popular Front, you had the actual Popular Front, and then you had the Left Front, which is from Catalonia, which, by the way, it's the same party that's the primary motivator behind Catalonia's secession now. Okay,
they want a class state.
Right.
Go ahead.
So this is you had inside the 4.41 million, the Popular Front had 3.751 million, and the Left Front 700,000. So the huge bulk of it was in the Popular Front, and this imaginary left that would have been leading the revolution from Barcelona, by the way, which is where that group was kind of centered, less than a million. So out of a total vote of 9.5 million. And you know, I mean, there's so many historical ironies because, you know, sometimes the Trotskyists refer to, and just like the Wall Street Journal, for example, refer to the October Revolution as being, you know, a coup, you know, as being, you know, this small minority, you know, the vanguard, all that, you know, et cetera, being anti-democratic and, you know, per se.
Totally wrong.
And yet here in Spain, let's have 700,000 people lead, you know, 9.5 million, but they have the right ideology. This is what Trotsky is selling in the midst of a war where the society is almost evenly developed, divided. Again, we've got 4.451 million on the left front, which is essentially the constitutional order with leftists in supporting it, and 4.375 million right-wing groups from center-right to the fascists being led by the fascists and attacking the constitutional order. That's how evenly divided. 4.5 million against 4.5 million, just about. And he's saying, let's split up our side.
Yes, let's split up our side. And he says more. He says, not only, you know, what you just pointed out, split the side everywhere, infiltrate the trade unions, etc. Not only that, what the Republic should have done was purge the army of its officer caste immediately.
Mm. Yeah.
And now this is particularly ironic.
Yeah, this is what they accused Stalin of doing and almost losing to Hitler, that when Stalin did that was evidence that he didn't know what he was doing and almost, you know, basically all the people Hitler killed, it was because Stalin purged the officer class.
Yeah, and that, of course, you know, exactly. And this is particularly ironic since His followers, as you pointed out, to this day accuse Stalin of having purged the Red Army and caused the collapse of the Red Army before the Nazi invasion. And this is, you know, an oversimplification and a distortion of the real facts.
Yep.
Because the purge of the army was not huge. It was a very small element, as I think next time we can talk about the myths.
Yeah.
These myths that the Trotskys have inherited.
Mm.
But it seems that army purges by Trotskys are okay, while purges by Stalin, right, small and necessary as they were, are not.
Right.
So,
well, of course, the proof is in the pudding, of course, because at the end of the day, Stalin was right because the USSR won. They beat Hitler. And Franco ruled Spain until the 1970s.
Yeah. Well, Stalin won because, among many other things, his generals and the Bolshevik Revolution being in place for 20 years, the industrialization and everything.
Right.
But he also won because these Moscow trials,
right,
the trial to Kaczewski, all of these, you know, eliminated what happened in Spain, eliminated this factionalism, splitting, you know, all the mess.
Yep.
You know, there's a difference between the Soviet Union and Spain. The Soviet Union had and matured a Bolshevik revolution, and Spain had not.
That's right.
And what needed to be defended was whatever was opposed to fascism. Then perhaps you could have this damn revolution that's
right
in his obsessive
right
mind.
Right. First, you have to defeat the fascists who are at the gate.
And he says the exact opposite.
Right.
In order to defeat fascism, you have to overthrow the bourgeois state.
You know, I'd like to know if he had any experience in the schoolyard, like on the playground with, you know, people fighting and how you don't get beat up being a small loudmouth like most of us guys that are involved in this stuff tend to be, how you survive that, because strategy and, tactical skill, very important survival skills on a school playground. And it seems to me that he is completely and totally naive about how things actually work. Unless, of course, as I suspect, he's misrepresenting these things for people that are, in fact, naive. But, you know, there's just one last thing I want to touch on because we're almost out of time. And that is the similarities between what happened in Spain and what we've seen in particular in the last few years in Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, you know, some other places where you have the forces on the ground, the electorate, let's say, as one manifestation of that, being pretty evenly divided. You had in each case for a good long while center-left or progressive governments, Socialist Party actually in power in Venezuela, but in Brazil and Argentina. And you have a very slow but substantive progress going on in all of these places and a massive attack by the U.S. and the West against this progress and the whole integration project in Latin America. People who are ostensibly on the left making the same statements, you know, in Venezuela that Maduro isn't going fast enough and that's the problem, that people need to not support Maduro, who is no Hugo Chavez. Of course, they said the same thing about him. And also, so what happened was that, you know, people sat on their hands for the National Assembly election back in 2015. The same thing happened in Argentina, where some of the hard left, quote unquote, what we're saying that, Cristina Fernandez de Silva and others were just not, you know, moving fast enough and that the left should stay home. And so you end up getting Macri. And they were saying the same thing about Dilma Rousseff and not standing up for her. And now you have, you know, what you have going on there. So I guess maybe we're going to have to pick this up back in Spain next week. But I wanted to point that little similarity.
Yeah, you just pointed out that the reverse happens, that when you do crush the whatever exists, you know, the bourgeois, then, you know, the fascists win. It's the opposite.
That's right. So we'll pick this up next week. Luciano, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.